Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
And we're back.
Where did we go?
We had a week break since the last show.
Has it been a week?
I mean, not really, because listeners don't know this, but we're recording this show at the beginning of the week, and last week's was at the end. So we were just in the studio, like, it feels like yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the days just kind of run together anymore.
They really seem to. But yo, this week is a national holiday because you got Hampton's homecoming this week.
I do.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Yes, it is. Are you getting giddy? Like, what's going on? Are you speechless?
It seems so far away because I have 150,000
things to do.
11 things to do before then.
Well, hair is popping, so that's already taken care of.
Facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's so many other things to do. Like, that had to happen earlier.
Now, do y'all do a black tie for homecoming, or do y'all do that in a different time of the year? I do remember seeing a Hampton black tie annually, but I don't know when it is.
Yeah, no, that's a different thing. There are multiple celebrations that happen during homecoming, but none of them are black tie.
Okay. All right, let me find out. Morgan is now fancier than Hampton.
I mean, we stay fancy. We don't just get fancy for homecoming. We just...
The jazz.
I mean, it's the truth, right? My daughter FaceTimed me today on her way to her speech class in a full-on suit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good.
Actually, she was on her way to another class and found out when she got there that the professor had an emergency, so class was canceled.
That's good. That's what she gets.
So
she was decked
out. She had her first, I hung out too late to have a 9 o'clock class the next morning experience.
That's excellent. See, she's doing
but the,
it right.
But the speech thing was at 10 o'clock. So she had to go to the 9 o'clock dressed in the suit for the 10 o'clock.
Good. That's what she gets.
And she FaceTimed me. She's just like, yeah, I'm done. I quit. And I'm like, yeah, stop with all that blasphemy. Don't ever call me and tell me you're quitting.
So both of our daughters are experiencing freshman life and like living it up. Cause my daughter is constantly talking to me about the function. She's like, I showed up at the function. And
the function.
That's what she calls the parties, the function.
Okay. Because there's multiple, so
yeah,
it's just nondescript.
My daughter's dressing scantily.
Mm.
I mean, look, she's in charge of herself now. I gave her the keys to herself earlier this year, so all I can do is say, hey, you know, you've got an agreement with me that you'll stay safe, and I can't say anything.
Yeah, it's...
But both our daughters out there showing that body-oughty. That's all I know. It's happening. I know your daughter is, because I know... They're similar in that
respect. But she will always lean on track and field as her excuse.
Yeah.
I just came from practice. Oh, we did an ab workout today. I was like.
That's why your stomach is out.
I'm like, but that's over. You in the calf now.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
What we don't do is walk around in sports bras. I'm like, that's not an athletic top. That's a sports bra, and that's not a top. So.
Man.
Yeah. She's in the gym building. Okay, I can live with it. But once you step outside that building, I need a shirt on.
She shouldn't be at the function like that.
No, not at the function. But what do I know?
Yeah.
I don't know what she's doing.
Yeah, that's true. This is very true.
We gave them the keys to themselves. I like that.
Yeah, well, I literally gave the keys to mine. I don't know if you've done that for yours, but I have. My daughter promised
to get. We have contracts and agreements.
Yeah.
I'm still that parent.
Good.
We had a social media agreement.
Okay.
When
in writing?
In writing.
What
made her
say?
Sign it. it's kind of like a pledge to not post certain types of pictures, not thou to shall berate not bear, anyone.
Thou shalt not bear cleavage on yep. the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thou shalt not text nudes.
All of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smart.
No mean girl behavior. We're not doing that. That's this nice. Was at like 13.
Okay.
Yeah, this was at 13.
Is it still valid? Like, do you harken back to it? Like, reference it?
So here's the thing. I know there's Finsta.
Okay. Which is?
Fake Instagram. You know this. Stop it.
Man. I thought you were talking about financial Instagram.
No. No.
See? Where my
mind
is. So
I told both my kids at young ages that I knew that they have Finstas.
Okay.
And that I would not check it, but I had people in the streets who would check it and would report streets. Back to me. If they saw anything.
First of all,
and they believed it.
Other parents don't count as the streets.
Correct.
And
but
did you actually?
They have big cousins.
Yeah. Did you actually know they have fake Instas?
I didn't know, but I knew by their reaction that they did.
Yeah. Got them.
So it was fast. Enough. It was enough for them to. And I still haven't identified what those accounts are. Mm. But I do have. They have big cousins and, you know, uncles and aunties who are just mm-hmm. old enough to come back to me and say, listen,
yeah,
I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
And so okay. only once. They have each had one occasion where I got a report back.
That's good. That's good parenting then.
I mean.
Yeah.
What you gonna do? You gotta let go at some point. Yeah, they're gonna make their own decisions.
My oldest could care less about social media. I have to tell him, hey, post. Hey, mm-hmm. make sure your page is active. Check your DMs. Like,
yeah.
use it for networking. So to each his own.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure we got your attention with today's title, Stop Spending Money Like a Drug Dealer.
It got my attention. I was like, what are we doing?
Andrea's like, how'd you know? So, we have a new client and we've been getting to know one another. I've known this person for a while, but I'm getting to know them financially. And she says, as she's going through her financials, she's like, I spend money like a drug dealer, don't I?
I just need to understand what that means.
And I had to actually agree. Like, this particular client, and I think a lot of us who make some good money now are spending money like we shouldn't.
Help me understand how a drug dealer spends money.
Okay.
Because I literally couldn't think of anything except maybe excessively luxurious items.
All right. I'll give you examples from this specific client. Okay. $1,200 shoes.
Multiple pairs or a treat?
Multiple pairs.
Oh, okay.
Hotel stays at $1,000 to $1,500 a night.
Just because?
For multiple nights.
Oh, yeah.
In the same month.
Mm.
Yeah. Very nice, expensive car, expensive furniture. I mean, the list really goes on and on and on.
Okay.
And the thing that got her attention is that she was about to buy this expensive dress. And her friend, like the dress was for a friend's wedding. And the friend was like, are you a drug dealer? Do you have secret millions that I don't know about?
Got it.
And she's like, no, I thought that, you know, this was appropriate for the setting.
Mm-hmm.
And it just highlights this idea that for a lot of us, and this particular client did not grow up with a lot of money. So like she never got a chance to see her parents have significant income and mm-hmm. assets. And therefore is really in uncharted territory. So she's spending money in ways that she felt appropriate given her level of income and didn't have any kind of sanity check. But here was the sanity check. Her friend said, let me show you my retirement account and then let me see yours. She saw the friend's retirement account and was like, yo.
Mm-hmm.
She was embarrassed to show hers.
Mm.
Because again, like we're making money that we never thought we'd ever make. And we're buying stuff that we thought we could never afford.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we still can't afford
it. We still can't afford it.
But we're buying them anyway and don't realize it.
Yeah.
So today's topic is behavioral finance, Andrea's favorite thing. And it's about spending. And in particular, we are going to leave you with some rules of thumb, some new really mindset shifting ideas that'll help you like think back to what it was like before you had all this money. Because for a lot of people, they know how to deal with small amounts of money,
mm-hmm.
but you give them a lot of money and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so we want you to stop spending like a drug dealer. And we're going to show you some of the errors in your ways, but also the things that you could learn from our low-income family members. And for a lot of us, this is stuff that we used to do that we're not doing anymore. So we'll get into it. So let's start with some stats. I'm going to start with some stats on poverty because I want you to understand how widespread this notion of low income is in America. So first, there's over 36 million people in America who were living at or below the poverty line. And just to describe what that income threshold is, that's a family of one who's living on $15,000 a year or less, or a family of four who's living at $32,000 a year or less. And for children, out of that 36 million people, there's 10 million are children living in those households. That's one out of every seven children in this country. And looking at those numbers, that's just not enough. Like $32,000 for a family of four? Like, that's very, very difficult.
I don't care where you are in the country. It's even in the places with the lowest cost of living.
Yeah.
That would indicate that most of these families are spending almost all of their income on basic necessities.
Absolutely. I mean, the stat is that for folks who are living at or below the poverty line, 75% of their money goes towards food and the essentials, food, transportation, rent, utilities.
So, I mean, if we're really talking about it, what's really left? Compare that to higher income earners, those expenses account for about 40%. So that leaves a lot more disposable income, if you will, to spend on or to go towards savings, investing, or other things.
Absolutely. And so the idea today is to, I know a lot of times the poor just get their back kicked in financially. People talk trash about them. But like, there are some aspects of being low income that are positive if we can borrow some of the good things. And obviously, I always got to just shout out the fact that, like, we have so much respect for those who are in these tough situations. Like, my mom grew up really, really poor. I'm talking about, I've said this before, she had holes in her shoes, hand-me-down clothes, eating, like, rice for dinner, like a cup of rice for dinner, or grits for dinner with nothing else. And my mom grew up with this mentality that she wanted to make sure that in our household, when I grew up, that there was always food. And literally, my parents, even to this day, all of the cabinets are always filled to the brim to the point where stuff is going bad. And it stems back to my mom's food insecurity. And my dad always says, my mom is really good with $20, but you give her $20,000 and she's going to blow it, you know? And so we're trying to tap into that mindset. What are the positives that we can take from that scarcity mindset that our high-income earners might appreciate? And I want to give you an example. So here's a real-life study that took place. And I'm going to give you the study right now, Andrea. Imagine you were buying a $300 iPad or a tablet, any kind of tablet. And you figured out that if you drove to another store 20 minutes away, you could save about $50 when buying that tablet. You taking that trip?
Probably.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now imagine the tablet costs $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
You figure out that you could save $50 by taking a 20-minute drive. You taking the drive?
Probably not.
Okay. Why not?
The ratio of the savings, the cost-benefit may not be there.
Yeah.
$50 compared, saving $50 on $1,000 is very different than saving $50 on $300.
Yeah.
It's still $50. Yeah. I get it. It's still $50, but right or wrong, I do that.
Your answer mirrors the study perfectly. So they did the study with low-income earners, and they did it with high-income earners. And on average, the low-income earner did the math really the way an economist would do the math, which is $50 and 20 minutes is the same exact trade-off. I drive 20 minutes to get $50. The price of the device actually has no bearing on the economics of the equation, but we as higher income people tend to like make a trade-off. We justify it. You're now adding in the price of the item when the lower income person is thinking about what is $50 worth to me?
Sure.
How much food can I buy for $50?
Totally makes sense.
How much transportation can I get for $50?
Right.
And so again, there are certain mindset things that are just different. And I would venture to say better.
Listen, I do this analysis all the time because it's sometimes about my time, right?
Yeah.
It's the same mindset of when we drive a further distance to get cheaper gas. And I'm like, but did we just spend our savings getting to the cheaper gas?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm also calculating, and I'm not trying to justify my mindset,
yeah,
but in real life, I'm calculating 20 minutes, $50. That's a dollar a minute. I'm also thinking, what else can I do with that 20 minutes?
Yeah. Well, it's $2 and some change a minute.
Well, whatever.
You're right.
Fine.
But both examples, it's still $50. But
absolutely. I acknowledge that too.
Yeah. Not saying that you're wrong. I just think it's very interesting about mindset. Mm-hmm. If I had asked you that same question when you were 19 years old, you might have had a different answer.
I'm probably saving the 50. I'm 19. I'm absolute value. It's $50.
So let's
today,
think about
my time.
But it's still 20 minutes.
It's still though. 20 minutes. It's 20 minutes.
I got you. Now listen. So think about your 19-year-old mindset. I'll tell you about mine and tell me about you for a second. So you had a bank account. You were working. I know you worked because you've told that story before. You worked in the off season.
Yeah,
you weren't running track, you had internships and jobs. And at any moment, I would imagine you knew exactly how much money you had in your checking account. Pretty close.
I pretty much do today as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
For a lot of people, they don't anymore.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, you ask them, like, if you were to ask me, like, how much money do I spend on my cable bill? Today, I have no idea.
Mm.
When I was a young man, I bought cable for my household when I graduated college. I knew exactly how much that bill was.
Yeah.
Right? If I were to ask you how much money you spent at the gas pump the last time you went.
I know.
How much?
$62 and some change.
You said, fill it up.
I filled it up, I was pretty low.
When you were 19, you said, give me $20 on pump 3.
For sure.
See?
Yep. Yeah.
It's a mindset shift.
So check this out, though. I guess I go back and forth because most of the time now, because most of the gas stations where we are, it may be a different price for cash versus credit. So I started buying gas with cash.
Mm. Smart.
And so I would just be like, I'm just getting $50.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I was averaging filling up once a week. And I'm just like, all right, so I know I'm spending $200 a month on gas unless I'm traveling or taking a road trip.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I get so low that I'm just going to fill it up and I'm going to spend more than $50.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm budgeting for gas.
Yeah. It makes sense. Listen, it makes sense. So today,
but that's why I remember the last time because I didn't do that. And I was like, 62 and change? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
First of all, I was really low. But if I had kept with my $50, I would have only spent that much on gas.
Yeah. So today is really about how do we borrow from our scarcity mindset? Because we all have it. Like, there's always been a time when we've had less than we have today. How do we borrow the good times from there? Like, how do we leave the anxiety that comes with it in the past, but borrow some of those positive mindsets from being able to do more with less? Because what happens as you make more money, people feel like they've graduated from budgeting. Mm-hmm. Like, when I had a little bit less, I had to budget by necessity, and now that I'm doing a little better, like, I don't have to anymore. Like, that's in the past. That's behind me.
Right. I can see how couples might have a scarcity versus
abundance
mindset.
Yeah.
Or how the same individual can have a scarcity mindset about some things, but not about other things.
Yeah.
That's probably who I am. I have it about certain things, but other things, I'm paying the convenience premium.
I'll tell you, for me, I'll spend endless quantities on my kids. I won't spend much on myself.
Hmm.
I'm even my wife, my mom,
mm-hmm.
my parents, my siblings. But when it comes to me, like, I just look at it differently.
Yeah.
So we're going to borrow some of that scarcity mindset and get you to stop spending money like a drug dealer. We'll go to break. When we come back, we'll keep the party going.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
And we're back.
It's the whisper that we're back. Like, this is a quiet storm.
Honestly, yo, every time we start the show, I do it a little bit differently just to get your reaction. You never know, like, how we're going to start.
I don't know what I'm going to do with that. Like, how am I going to parlay this into whatever we're doing next?
And we're back. I'm going to hit that one next time. So I'm going to ask you a money question real quick. Okay. Name something that you used to do at 19 or 20 or 21 that I couldn't pay you to do right now. Whether it be eat something, drink something, go somewhere, wear something. What's something that you used to do regularly?
And it's not necessarily financial, right?
It's something that involves a purchase, some sort of consumption.
I would not go to Krispy Kreme and eat a half a dozen donuts at 2 a.m.
You won't do that now?
I will not do that now.
You would do that then?
I did it.
So that's about your health consciousness.
Hot donut sign, 7 and 2.
Yeah.
A.M. and P.M. I knew when.
And what's crazy, Hampton had like the first Krispy Kremes that I ever had.
For real?
Yeah, because we used to drive, you know, my family's from down that way.
Mercury so. Boulevard.
Yes. Yes. That was the one.
I knew when the hot donut sign came on and I would.
It's interesting that you brought that up. Like, one of the things that.
How does a person eat 6 donuts?
Easy. I've done it. I've done it in the last couple of years.
Like, I was in training as an athlete. Makes no sense. Couldn't hilarious. Pay me to do it now. I think I would be sick.
But one of the things high income people tend to do differently is eat different, like more healthy, more like just quality things in general. Like on my example I was going to give is like, I used to eat McDonald's religiously, like 3 meals a day almost. I can do McDonald's breakfast now. I can't eat McDonald's after 10:30 anymore.
Can't eat it at all. Last 2 times I had it, I got sick. Sorry, you were there for one of those times.
It's funny. Certain alcohol I can't drink anymore either. Where I'm like, I used to love drinking that. And now
at 19?
You couldn't pay me. Yeah, 20, 21. I started drinking at 19.
Yeah, there are definitely. So I got another one for you.
Okay.
And I'm going to offend some grown people.
Okay.
Get my hair done at the Dominican shop.
You don't do that anymore?
No.
Really? The doobies? The $20 or $50 doobie?
No.
Really?
They I are thought they burning people's hair
I
off.
I thought they took good care for the low. I did not know that.
I mean,
I've never had one before.
Now that I'm a naturalista, that's just, you're just damaging your hair. Because the way they, the amount of heat they use to straighten the hair.
Okay.
It's damaging. I'm not saying I wouldn't go every once in a while for the convenience, but that's not where I'm going for hair care.
Okay. All right. What about you going to Jiffy Lube to get your oil changed?
No.
Okay. You would go at 19?
Yes.
Why not?
And did.
Why not?
I drive a different car.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not like beating you down on like things. Listen, but like, yo, we graduate. It's lifestyle creep. Inflation. There's inflation baked in.
For sure.
So let's take some of these positive money lessons from our lower income earning past. So the first thing is how you prioritize your essentials is just differently.
Yes.
Like, you budget more when you have less. You also use like this zero-based budgeting mindset, like this idea that like, I need to make sure I kind of know where every dollar goes. Like, I can't just be out here just winging it, because that'll mean less money for later.
So the thing that could work though with a zero-based budget today is you still assign money to guilt-free spending or fund money.
Yeah.
Or no explanation needed money.
You sure
so
can.
if you assign it to that, then you can spend there can be some freedom in that.
For sure. But I'll give you my example of zero-based budget. Yeah. So back in the day, I was let's just say I was courting a young woman, mm-hmm. and this is hard to tell the story properly and keep it PG, but I was courting this woman and she's like, yo, how do I know you're being sincere? Well, if you come here tomorrow, then I'll know that you're for real and I'll go out on that date with you. And by the tomorrow, I had no money. Like, mm-hmm. I had zero money left. I went to KFC that day for lunch and I just got a small mashed potatoes. No chicken. No biscuit, right? Like, like
you're not doing that today.
What I'm saying is, like, that's the zero-based budget. Like, look, I had a good time the night before. There was no zero money left over for the courtship the next night as a result, because there's nothing left. Zero-based budgeting. It's different. It's different. Like, I guess today, zero-based budgeting is like, all right, if I spend a little too much on this category, there'll be less for that category. I'm saying, like, when we've got this...
There is zero left.
There's zero left is all I'm highlighting at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So did you go back?
Nah. Missed out.
Hmm.
Never saw this young lady again.
So you were too prideful to just go back and be like, I'm here.
Okay.
But I...
No, I couldn't...
I don't got it to I couldn't take you pay nowhere, the, but I am here.
I couldn't pay the cost of admission to get into the place where she worked.
Oh.
That's what...
See, I wasn't even, I forgot about your comments before you told the story.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Other mindset things. Hypervigilance and awareness of cost. Psychological studies show that.
I totally missed that.
So other mindset things from our low-income past. Spending cash on stuff as opposed to credit and debit cards, which helps us to overspend.
It's my guess.
That's how you do the gas. I like it. Bring your own luxury. So to avoid expensive discretionary purchases, you do special things with less. Like, imagine the times I'm sure you and your husband spent at the park instead of at a fine restaurant. And you had just as good of a time, probably a better time.
Absolutely.
At the park with a picnic basket. Having a DIY mentality. I remember when I bought my first crib, I mean, I was in my 20s and I couldn't afford to hire a contractor or designer or architect to do some of the things I wanted to do. So I did it myself. I learned how to refinish drywall and refinish hardwood floors. And I never got into the car repairs though. Like, that just not in my skill set. But like, when you have less income, you do more things for yourself.
Absolutely. Are you are willing to learn how to do things for yourself? Because it's like, I'm not paying that for that.
Yeah. Another one is utilizing resources in the community. I'll give you an example. I just met a person and I was telling him about this great book that I listened to on Audible. I think I told you all about this already. It's called The King of Ashes. Great book.
Yes.
And I'm telling a friend about it and she's like, hey, did you know you could download this book for free using your library card on this app called Libby? And I'm like, I never knew about Libby. But you could actually borrow books using your public library card the same as you could buy them on Audible or pay a subscription mm-hmm. over there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I never would have thought about that sort of resource.
Yeah.
Like, I remember back in the day, did you ever go to the public library to borrow CDs?
I never did that. And
DVDs?
I was much older than I'm willing to admit when I learned you can get CDs and DVDs from the library.
Yeah.
I didn't know until I had children and I was taking them for a little mommy and me.
That's when I figured
read alongs. I was like, look at that.
Mm-hmm. But like, what other resources are readily available to you that you're just passing up on because you've got the money to afford it? How many things do you have a subscription to that are available free if you listen to ads?
Right.
I mean, like, a lot of it.
Yeah. I got free Pandora. Maybe I shouldn't list all the stuff that I'm doing the unpaid or free versions, but I'm like, I don't need it.
We've talked about this already, but a completely different attitude about discretionary spending. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not essential. Like, it's a low priority item. When you're shopping, a low-income shopper tends to get a lot more value for their money by price checking a few different places, going to discount stores. Like, sometimes, you know, going to off Fifth instead of Saks Fifth Avenue, or going to Marshall's instead of Macy's, or, you know, like
Nordstrom Rack instead of Nordstrom.
Yeah, like, it might take you a little more time to find what you're looking for, but you'll come up. You'll come up.
Absolutely. Meal planning and cooking at home. Mm-hmm. I actually really like this one. I actually eat better when I do it.
Of course you do.
I feel better, I eat better, and I save money. So it's the compounding on that return to me is everything.
Mm-hmm. Free entertainment. Going to a community festival instead of paying to go to, what's everybody going to right now? The Breezy Fest or whatever it's called.
You know the dance? Did you learn the dance?
I did not.
You didn't?
Absolutely not.
Have you seen it enough to know it? Like, I feel like I could do it if I tried to do it. No.
I think I need you to do it.
I will say, I think I know it because I've seen it so much.
Yeah.
And I did not go to the concert. I'm just like, oh, is this what's happening right now? Mm-hmm. Between that and what's the other thing people are doing online? It's like, oh, I told them I would do XYZ if they would be my backup dancer.
Yeah,
have you seen that one?
I've seen that one. Yeah. Other things?
That's free entertainment to me.
Listen, absolutely. Other things, avoiding late fees. Like, what's funny, I was reading a story about a person who's a journalist, and she was talking about as she made more money, she just got so much looser that she looked up and she was overdrawing accounts. She was getting late fees for this and that. But when she was lower income, like, she wasn't paying late fees. She wasn't overdrawing because she was way more vigilant about her balances. She knew the consequences of paying things late and was just, you know, that much more focused on not doing it. Like, how often have we just said, okay, the late fee or the ATM fee is just a cost of doing business now? Like, we don't think about it anymore.
Man, one of the banks in our community, their ATM fee is now $4.
That's crazy. But you're
paying
it.
I've seen $3.50. I paid it because I was there already, but I will no longer pay that.
Yeah.
And I my credit union will reimburse me up to $10 a month for ATM fees. But I'm like,
that's 40% of your whole thing in one dip at the
I'm
ATM.
Saying, I was like, $4? I will not be coming here anymore.
So my little hack that I figured out, Schwab, where a lot of our accounts are, they reimburse you unlimited ATM fees globally.
Really?
Yeah. I've been hitting that thing.
I need to make some changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Add banking to my investment account features.
So we've highlighted a couple of mindset shifts that I hope that y'all recognize some of these in your own life. We could have given a lot more examples, but there were things that you used to do that you're not doing anymore that you should pick back up. And so we're going to go to break now. When we come back, I want us to give some rules of thumb. Like, these are little tricks and tips that you can put in your pocket that will be helpful when you're in those moments where it's time to splurge or buy your next trip to wherever, your next hotel stay or whatever, so that you can think about it a little bit differently, so that you can stop spending money like a drug dealer out here.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are not drug dealers
anymore.
Now you play too much.
We'll be right back.
It's the pathway to freedom that's needed to the North Star.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
momentum.
And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all still out here spending money like drug dealers?
Some people are.
We're trying to stop it, though. Get it under control. I will say I have this little joke in our firm. I don't know if you've ever heard me say this before, but
probably
we'll be landing a new client, and I'll be like, well, when we get this one, then I won't have to sell drugs anymore. It's just a joke. It's literally every, like, I like crime shows and like drug dealing crime shows, and they're always trying to go clean.
Why?
I don't know. I just do. But they're always trying to go clean, and they never make it. Like, something always happens to throw them off.
That's beforehand. Pretty depressing.
It's just, I don't know.
I want somebody to make it.
I know. It's like good times. I like good times, too.
They got out.
They did not get out.
Yes, they did.
Did they?
Series finale.
Never saw
Keith it. Keith got his contract with the Chicago Bears.
First of all, Keith got injured at the wedding.
Right, but he rehabilitated. He
really?
Got, yes, he got a contract. Oh, my gosh.
Did not know that.
This cannot be a spoiler alert. Except for Alan Boomer.
40 years later?
No, he got to work out with the Bears. He signed a contract. They bought an apartment somewhere, moved Mama with them. And it turns out—
Mama was gone.
No, Jane, Daddy was gone.
No,
James
she
died.
Moved away.
But she came back.
Did she actually come back? Did they say she came back?
No, she actually came back.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know this.
Thelma was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilona got a new job and got an apartment in the same building.
And then the earthquake happened.
No. That's how it ended.
And then there was a mass shooting. Like,
JJ sold some artwork. I don't think he was moving with them. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You really didn't know this?
Yo, I've never
seen
the last
card
episode.
Revoked. That's because you want to stay in darkness.
Okay, fine. So let's get into these rules of thumb. These are things that should help you as you're making the big, big money, just to not overdo it. The first one is really, it goes back to this idea, like we know you're probably not going to go out and start budgeting, but one budget that we like is the 50-30-20 budget, which is 50% going towards your needs, 30 going towards your wants, and 20% going towards your savings. Flip it on its head a little bit. Like, let's try to save our money first, right? And maybe 20 is not enough. Like, this client that we talked about earlier, like, we're going through her numbers and, like, she's not saving enough. Like, to get to the number she wants to get to, her 20 needs to probably be like 30, right? So whatever portion you have left that's for spending, that's for your wants. Let's say, I know I said 50, 30, 20, and 20 is for wants. Like, but think about your income net of taxes and apply these percentages. So if I make $20,000 a month net of taxes, and 20% of that is $4,000, am I really trying to spend all of that on a weekend?
Yeah.
Like, does that mean I get no more ice cream the rest of the month? Like, add that type of percentage, whatever the percentage in your budget, in your mental budget that you've allotted for splurging.
Like, yeah. And so for me, with that rule, guardrail, whatever, framework, whatever you want to call it, it might not be 50, 30, 20 for everybody.
Yeah.
I think the most meaningful thing to do is to have a percentage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or a dollar amount or whatever it is. I like percentages because dollar amounts can change. Yeah. But if you have one and you stick to it or you try to stick to it, I think you're going to have some success.
Yeah.
Does the savings part have to be meaningful? Of course it does, but it has to be something.
Yeah.
And if you don't have any guardrails at all, then that's how you end up what we call bleeding money.
Mm-hmm.
Just money just goes places and you don't even realize it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, some people might need to, like the example we gave about lower income families spending a higher percentage of their income on their basic needs, they may not be able to do the 50, 30, 20 rule.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Yeah. But if they've got a 80, 5, 15, you know, it just might be different for some people. And it might be different for some people at different stages of their lives.
Yeah. The issue, though, becomes you've got savings and you've got money left over the last month or the last couple months. And you're like, oh, I'm just dipping into my savings a little bit for this excursion. But I think we really got to think of it month to month.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just because I didn't spend it all last month, does it mean that I get to spend it
Right.
This month?
Like, yes.
Maybe not. Like,
that is.
Especially.
My adult children are now learning that.
Yeah. The next one is the work hours rule. This is when you reframe the cost of the item based on how much money you make per hour. And you ask yourself, is it worth X hours of my time?
Mm-hmm.
So first you got to figure out how much you make per hour. Like, mm-hmm. let's just say the number ends up being, just to use round numbers, I don't know, $200 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to buy something that costs $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth half of my whole workday to pay for this pair of shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I spent a whole week at work.
Yep.
Almost a whole day just to get this pair of shoes. Knowing that, if we use that work hours mentality, like, I know I need X number of days to cover my mortgage.
That's right.
I need X number of days to cover my 401k contribution. Mm-hmm. It ain't but like a couple days left. Yeah. Do I want to spend that whole day to pay for this pair of shoes?
That's a great one. I think I'm going to use that with the oldest.
Yeah.
He's substitute teaching, but he has figured out how many days he needs to be available to work
mm-hmm.
to cover his rent.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
That's real right there.
Yeah. Is it worth it? Like, the time it took.
Right.
Because the thing you got to realize is, like,
you're going to spend 7 hours with them kids
to get,
for a weekend of hanging out.
Like, there's a trade-off. The money we spend today is at the expense of our future self.
Mm-hmm.
So however you got to machinate it in your head, we got to do better. The next one is the 30-day delay rule. The 30-day delay rule.
I'm not that patient.
And this is about fighting off impulses.
Mm-hmm.
So the 30-day rule is simply anything that's going to cost you more than 10% of your pay. You have to wait 30 days. And I would add in, get multiple quotes if it's a service. But you got to wait 30 days before you pull the trigger on it.
That's fair.
So if you make $20,000 every month, if it costs more than $2,000, you can't make that as an impulse purchase.
Yeah.
You've got to sit on it, think about it, sleep on it.
Or decide if 10% is your benchmark, right? Sometimes you might want to make it 5.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I have alerts on my bank accounts to let me know if there is a transaction, money in or out, that's over a certain dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to know if that's something I really did. That's more for security reasons, but at the same time, it's a very similar mindset.
Yeah.
Because then if I'm spending more than that on something, I need to take a step back and think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, another tactic is, you know, put it in your cart, whether you're shopping on Amazon or whatever website. Like, I don't shop on Amazon personally, but whatever website you're shopping on, put it in your cart and put a calendar reminder that, hey, you're supposed to buy this next month on the 28th.
You don't even need to put a calendar reminder, because you know what? The algorithms are going to remind you, hey, this is still in your cart.
Yeah.
500 people bought it.
Yeah.
Since you put it in your cart.
You missing out.
It's going fast.
They having a good ass time.
Yeah.
With this
it's you don't even have to remind yourself. They will remind you.
But
I know from experience.
Yeah.
Other people who bought this also bought this or looked at that.
That's funny.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
I got some in some carts right now.
Do you? That's funny. But yeah, if you can fight that impulse feeling, you'll do better financially. And I would imagine some of these things you're not going to spend money on, period. Or like you said, maybe you're spending less money on it.
I like this next one.
The value per use rule.
Love it.
Why don't you break this one down?
I'm not even looking at it. I'm just going to tell you how I apply it.
Okay.
There was a time in my life, talk about stuff I used to do at 19 that I don't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Only people of a certain age will get this reference, but my mom used to call me Imelda Marcos.
Okay.
I had a thing for shoes.
Okay.
I still love shoes, but I will buy shoes. If I love a good shoe, I could have nothing to wear with it. But if I liked it and it was pretty, I had envisioned outfits that I was going to wear it with, I would just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm kind of more into quality over quantity.
Okay.
But I do think about the value per use. So, for example, I'm willing to pay a little more for something if I think I'm going to keep it for a long time and wear it forever.
Okay.
pair of black, every woman needs a quality pair of black pumps.
Yes.
I personally feel the same way about boots, but you know,
okay.
But I'm doing the value per use.
We'll allow it.
Costing. So, mm-hmm. right, I will pay more for a pair of black pumps or a pair of sneakers than I would for a pair of sandals that I can only wear 4 months out of the year.
Yeah. So what you're doing mentally is you're saying, how much does it cost divided by how many times am I going to use it or how many years am I going to use it?
Exactly.
So for example, if I were buying a couch and I think the couch is going to last me 10 years, which is a long time for a couch, but the couch costs $5,000, then I'm basically saying it is $500 a year for that couch. Like, is it worth $500 every year?
It's just $1.50 a day to sit on it. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I do this with services as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you pointed out, I think it was the last show we recorded or a recent show we recorded about my different looks with my hair.
Yeah.
But I'm doing a cost assessment. Like, how long is this hairstyle going to last?
Word.
Right? If I'm going to pay the same amount for, I don't know, braids or twists and a wash and go, yeah. I'm not doing that because that wash and go is gone in
saying.
A couple days.
I know what you mean, girl. I know exactly what you mean.
So, I didn't need you to snap and fix your lips like that.
Girl, I know exactly what you mean.
I'm just saying, but I think about that. It's like, where am I going? What am I doing? How long is this style going to last me for the amount of hours I'm going to sit in the chair? Or for the amount that I'm going to pay for it.
Yeah. That's it. Coffee machine costs $400. You're going to use it 300 days out of the year.
I've been making my coffee at home for years.
You're going to keep it for 5 years. That's 1,500 uses. So that's 27 cents per use.
I buy a cup of coffee out. I'm going to pay $3 to $6 for a cup of coffee out versus then 50 cents for a cake.
Worthwhile.
K-cup. Yeah.
All right. I'll go back to the client we talked about earlier. She was about to buy a dress that was going to cost thousands of dollars that she's probably going to get photographed in once and never want to wear again.
I'm like, sis.
Yeah.
As the bride and groom, I'm like, why don't you just fall back? Let me be the star of the day.
Yeah.
And if you want to spend that much on my wedding, you could bless us with that.
All right.
I wouldn't say that to them, but.
The next Hampton Gala. Like, the next one you go to, like, how much you going to spend on your dress?
So...
like, because you're not re-wearing that dress.
I got a dress on sale. I mean, I might... my first time wearing it might be this weekend, but I'm going to wear it after that.
Yeah?
Okay. I'm definitely going to wear it after that. But I also... I'm going to tell everybody my secret.
Yeah.
I use this service where I rent outfits.
Okay. Like, rent the runway?
Rent the runway.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I really should be an ambassador.
So I was just at a conference and one of the founders of Rent the Runway was up there created a whole new category because like there's a lot of people that were buying disposable clothing that instead were able to trade up to nicer things that they could just borrow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I do it. Yes, it saves money. It saves me money, but I also do it for the convenience.
Yeah.
And I mostly reserve dresses for formal events.
Yeah.
Because the time it takes to go try on, get it altered, all of that, nobody has time for that.
Yeah. Now, I know we're trying to get you to stop spending so much money, but you brought up a good point about quality. Like, if something is pricier and it's going to last longer, then the value per use might actually be in your favor. Like a couch, like you're going to spend a lot of time on your couch or a mattress. Like, the value to you of having a good mattress.
Good sleep.
Very, very worth it. Next rule, and this is the last one, and then we'll wrap it up. The one in, one out rule. And this is one that's about money and also clutter. So the idea is for every one new non-essential physical item that I buy, something else has to go from my closet.
Yeah, I'm to the point where the ratio is different. Like 2 to 3 things need to go for every one new thing
really?
That comes in.
Is that what's happening right now?
I'm trying. It's not working well, but I'm trying. But there's a lot of purging that needs to happen.
And you could donate or sell the item that's leaving your closet. Mm-hmm. But the idea is eventually you'll get to a point where there will only be things in your closet that you love.
Right.
And there's a cost of losing something every time you try to gain something.
Yeah.
And you'll think about the purchase a little bit differently.
For sure.
Because a lot of us will just buy a bigger closet or use a different closet in the house. But we got to be economical.
I actually don't want to do that. Yeah. I want to get to that point where I love everything that's in my closet.
Yeah.
But I also hate waste. So it's a hard thing for me.
Yeah.
I hate waste.
I have a problem that I'll tell you right now. I feel fresh when I buy new stuff. Like, even if I don't wear it that
often. You're not doing the rent the wrong way because you're not buying it.
I would, but like, I will admit, like, I like the high I get from impulse shopping. Like, there are times when shopping will pull me out of depression. I know that's not right. I shouldn't say that. But
no,
like,
no, I get that. I get that because I hadn't done that in a long time. I had the time and the opportunity to do that this weekend where I actually went into a store, looked around, tried things on, made some purchases. Like, it felt really good. It wasn't impulse, but it still felt really good because I hadn't done that in a long time. But I really think when it comes to spending, we all have a thing. And I feel like this is my own behavioral finance opinion. Mm-hmm. We all have a thing or two or 10 that we are willing to spend more money on than the average person. And that's okay. You just can't have so many of those.
Yeah,
that
that's true.
They're all in that category. So for you, if you know you like impulse shopping, then if you're going to use the zero budget approach, then you just have to put some money towards impulse shopping.
Yeah,
and then you don't have to worry about it.
That's what I do. That's exactly
it's just like,
I
this is my impulse shopping bucket. I know I'm going to do this, so I'm just going to assign a dollar to it. And then when I'm done, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to save my money first, and then I try to spend after, but then I'll over and I'll just take some from my savings. I know it's not right, but like, it's how I do it.
I mean, yeah. If at least, I don't know, I'm speaking for myself. If I'm taking from my savings for something that I want for myself and it's outside of the money I had put aside for that, I'm consciously thinking about replenishing that savings.
Yeah.
So then I got to do a little less spending the next month or the next couple of months until it gets back to where it was.
So mindset shift, other things. I'll tell you one thing that's worked for me. The more money I save and invest, like, it's like a little game I'm playing with myself to see how big my balance can grow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like it. I like looking at my investment account and seeing what I put in versus what it's worth. And that that difference excites me.
Absolutely.
Watching that account makes me spend less money because I'm like, no, it was there. Now I want it to be here. Like, yo, imagine if it's...
Yeah.
Like, you got to make some sort of competition with yourself looking at your investment account balance.
Yes.
Because the thing about being wealthy, wealth is the idea that you've got an abundance of financial assets and those assets are working for you, not just you working for your money. And in order to do that, you need some assets.
Absolutely. And one way to make that game, that competition with yourself, really interesting... I literally have the same amount. We're talking about percentages. The same percentage I put into my savings is the same percentage that I invest.
Good.
So then it's easy for me to see, okay, I put this over here and I put this over there, but over here it's growing like this most of the time lately versus not so much on the saving side. It's an easier comparison.
Yeah, I'm putting all my savings in my investment account. Like, that's how I'm doing now.
Yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if I need money and it's all invested, I'll borrow it on margin until I can replenish it. But it's been working for me.
That's not a recommendation. We're just sharing what we're doing.
Just me.
Yep. No, I do equal lately.
Good. And it works.
Just my choice.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
Other attitude changes. Gratitude. Like, how often do you really just sit back and just say, I'm thankful for what I have, as opposed to worrying about what you don't have? Like, that attitude of abundance, that attitude that, like, I already have been so blessed with so many things. It makes you think about what you do with your money a lot differently. I found that since I've been adopting this attitude of gratitude, like, this feeling that I'm so blessed, like, it makes me more charitable. Like, I give way more than I ever used to now. And it comes from this attitude of gratitude. Other things. Be optimistic. There's research that shows a strong link between your view on money, being positive, and having positive outcomes with your money.
As long as you keep your head to the sky.
Be optimistic. Did you ever hear the version with Brandy singing that? It's so good. That's a great song.
From Tiny Desk?
She did it on Tiny Desk too.
Yes, yep. I did. You know,
she did it on there too. And then finally, forgive yourself. forgive yourself for the mistakes you made in the past. You may feel like you've made so many mistakes in the past that you'll never overcome them. But if you're blessed with today, you have a chance to be better today than you were yesterday.
Tomorrow's a new day.
And if God gives you tomorrow, then you can be better tomorrow than you were today. But there's no sense in crying over the past when it comes to money mistakes.
Great is thy faithfulness. New mercies each morning.
You better preach. So I hope you enjoyed today's show. We talked about not spending all your money. We hopefully gave you some new mindset changes and some rules of thumb that'll just help you make better financial decisions on an everyday basis. And if you need help with your personal financial situation, if you want a gut check or someone to look at your math and see if it's mathing, reach out to us on our website, momentum-advisors.com. Go to the contact page and you will land on the schedule of either me or Andrea or maybe both.
Hey, listen, we are not budget coaches. I do want to say that.
That is very
true. We are kind of, well, and I say that because I want people to be, I want to level set expectations. Because sometimes we do get a lot of listeners or just family, friends, people who reach out to us because they're really looking for a budget coach.
Yeah.
And that's not really where we shine the most or where we can be the most helpful. Mm-hmm. But we do use this platform and other opportunities to educate and give you some tips and ideas on how to do better.
That's it. Yeah, our goal is to help you to build wealth and to create a new legacy in your family.
That's it. I like to say it this way. Sometimes we think we need a budget, and we do. We need a retirement plan, and we do. But sometimes, more than anything, we need a spending plan.
Yeah.
And I think that just gets underrated.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The value of it gets underrated. So.
And truly, the person in charge of that plan, it ain't me or Andrea.
That's right.
It's you.
That's it.
Keep listening. We'll be back next week.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.